Come, Chichely, you know good horse flesh. Mine's worth, what would you say, £50?
He roars and blows like a pair of bellows, young Vincey. Not a bad trotter, though. I'll give you that much for free.
I'm happy with his paces, I know. But I need to sell Chichely. I've a debt of £160 to clear before my father or anyone discovers it. I'm in bad odour at home already. I've got 80 stashed away, but I need the rest.
Then what good's £50, or 25 more like, for that old wind instrument, eh? This is a horse fair, boy. You need to speculate a bit, find a bargain and make a profit.
Will you help me?
Well, now, I've a friend here in Hounslow speaks of a farmer who wants a quick sale of his prize hunter, Diamond, and from what I've heard, he's a public character. Arab blood, dappled grey, crosses 6-foot fences like a hurdler.
Lord Medlicott's man is looking out for a grey, I know.
Well, there you are, then. Merchandise and market. It's a gift. Pity it started snowing, else there was time for us to go to the stables before dark and look at the horse.
Let's go anyway, at once.
Well, it's some way through the town, and those back alleys are none too savoury. Drink up first, eh? Your health, Vincey.
Edward?
My love.
What shall I do?
Whatever you please, my dear. You are unhappy reading the Greek I set you.
I should most like to do something which assisted you directly in your work now we're home. Organising your notes, or writing to your dictation, perhaps.
Thank you, Dorothea. But today I feel a little out of sorts and would prefer not to exert myself beyond the usual routine.
Mr. Brooke and Miss Celia, sir, madam.
Don't!
Oh, I feared you wouldn't come. The snow!
Wanted to surprise you both, you know.
Oh, dear uncle. Oh, Celia, you look so well, so very well.
I need not ask how you are, my dear. Rome has agreed with you, I see. Happiness, frescoes, that sort of thing. But Casaubon is a little pale, you know. Ah, nothing to alarm you, my dear. A little English beef and mutton will soon make the difference. Ladislaw's friend painted you as Aquinas, eh, Casaubon? Does anybody read Aquinas now?
He is not indeed an author suited to superficial minds.
I read Aquinas once, you know, but I saw it wouldn't do, too dry.
Do you think it nice to go to Rome on a wedding journey, Dodo?
Oh, it is. It wouldn't suit you, dear.
Mrs. Cadwallader says it's nonsense going far away because the couple can't quarrel comfortably as they would at home. And Lady Chetham went to Bath.
Celia, has something happened?
Ah, Celia has great news to tell. I leave it all to her.
It was because you went away and there was nobody but me for Sir James to talk to.
Oh, my dear. It is as I hoped and believed.
It was only 3 days ago, and Lady Chetham is very kind.
Congratulations, Miss Brooke.
Sir James is such a good, honourable man, Kitty.
He's gone on with the cottages, Dodo. He will tell you all about them when he comes. Shall you be glad to see him?
Of course. How can you ask?
Only, I was afraid you would be getting too learned.
Mrs. Garth.
Oh, you, Fred. So early in the day. You look quite pale. Something happened?
I want to speak to Mr. Garth. And to you also.
Oh, Caleb will be back in a few minutes. Stay here with me while I bake.
Have you no pupils now, Mrs. Garth?
Oh, I've done with pupils for a while, Fred. I've £92 saved for Alfred's premium. He can go to be apprenticed at Mr. Hanmer's now. He's just the right age. Ah, Caleb. See who's here.
Ah, Fred, my boy. You're here a bit times. Is anything up at home? What's the matter?
Mr. Garth, I'm come to tell you and Mrs. Garth something that will give you a bad opinion of me. I'm come to say that I can't keep my word. I can't find the money to meet the bill after all. I've been unfortunate. I've only got these £50 towards the 160.
Bill?
Oh, I didn't tell you, Susan. I put my name to a bill for Fred. He made sure he could meet it himself.
I suppose you have asked your father for the rest of the money and he has refused you.
No, but I know it will be of no use to talk to him, and I should not like to mention Mr. Garth's name in the matter.
It's come at a bad time, Fred. Christmas upon us. No one looking to have land managed at any expense. This will take every farthing I have in the bank. What shall we do, Susan?
I must give it the £92 I put by for Alfred. Mary will have 20 saved from her salary by this time.
I shall certainly pay it all, Mrs. Garth, ultimately.
Yes, ultimately. But boys cannot be apprenticed ultimately. They must be apprenticed at 15.
I tried everything. I bought a horse worth hundreds, only it turned out vicious and lamed itself. I wish the horse and I had been at the devil before I brought this on you. There's no one I care for more than you and Mr. Garth and... But it's no use. You will always think me a rascal after this. I must go now and tell Mary.
I was most in the wrong, Susan. I'd no business fingering bills. I was a fool.
That you were. But we shall manage. You will have to give up your bad habits, Caleb. Some men take to drink. You work without pay and sign bills for idle young men.
Poor Mary. I'm afraid, Susan, she may be fond of Fred. Deuce take the bill! I wish it were a Hanover. These things are a sad interruption to business.
Dorothea, here's a letter for you, which was enclosed in one addressed to me.
Mr. Ladislaw, what can he have to say to me? But I can imagine what he has written to you about. I didn't mention it in Rome, that he's made up his mind to give up his dependency on you and come back to England and work his own way. I told him you would be pleased. You've always been so generous to him, Edward.
You can, if you please, read the letter. But I may as well say beforehand that I must decline the proposal it contains to visit here. I trust I may be excused from such distractions as have been hitherto inevitable, and especially from guests whose desultory vivacity makes them a fatigue.
Why do you attribute to me a wish for anything that would annoy you? You speak to me as if I was something you had to contend against. Wait at least until I appear to consult my own pleasure apart from yours.
Dorothea, you are hasty.
No, Edward. I think it was you who were first hasty in your false suppositions about my feeling.
We will, if you please, say no more on this subject, Dorothea. I have neither the leisure nor energy for this kind of debate. I shall retire to the library.
To my dear heretic cousin-in-law, I have sadly missed our debates, and I shall in this letter lecture you on the virtues of the plastic arts through the medium of poetic metaphor, and then, as a postscript, compel you to a love of things as they are. What if I were to suggest...
Oh! Edward!
Mary, please don't cry.
Oh, poor mother. Poor father.
I wouldn't have hurt you so for all the world. You can never forgive me.
Oh, Fred, what does it signify whether I forgive you?
Say what you like, I deserve it all. But a man may be unfortunate, you know, and find himself unable to pay when he meant it. There's not a better man in the world than your father, and yet he got into trouble over bills.
How dare you make comparison between my father and you? He never got into trouble through selfish, idle pleasures. He got into trouble through thinking of others and working for others, doing better for others than they could ever understand.
Whereas I'm a good-for-nothing blackguard, it's true.
I should have thought one of those epithets would do at a time.
You'll not ever think well of me again, so nothing matters to me now. I won't speak to you again. I'm very sorry for all the trouble I've caused, that's all.
Oh, Fred, how ill you look. Oh, sit down a moment. Don't go yet. Let me fetch you something. Oh, you look so very pale.
I feel done in, Mary. I think I may have caught a chill.
I warn everyone of this, Celia. This is just what might have been expected.
You're so clever, James, to think of Dr. Lydgate.
Oh, my mother speaks very highly of him. She has found him uncommonly sound.
Poor dear Dodo. It's also dreadful.
Oh, my dearest, don't distress yourself too much. I cannot bear to see you unhappy.
It's very shocking Mr. Casaubon should be ill. But I never did like him. And I think he's not half fond enough of Dorothea. And he ought to be, for who else would have had him?
I always thought it a horrible sacrifice of your sister.
Yes, but poor Dodo never did do what other people do. And I don't think she ever will.
She's a noble creature.
Yes, But nobility is never quite comfortable to be with, I find. Shall I go to her, do you think?
Oh, your uncle is going to them, dearest. I think you should stay here with me.
Breathe in again, if you will, Mr. Casaubon. And out.
A stethoscope, by heaven. I've heard of such a thing. No scientific advance there, eh, Lydgate?
Uncle, Edward should have rest now.
That's right. A life of leisure, eh? You should fish, you know, Casaubon. Cadwallader's in your kind of work, and he fishes, and he's as ready as could be. Or you could have a turning room. Make toys, table legs, that kind of thing.
In short, you advise me to anticipate the arrival of my second childhood.
What do you think, Dr. Lydgate?
Perhaps undesired amusement is an unsatisfactory prescription, like telling people to keep up their spirits. But Mr. Brooke's instincts are correct, in essence. Perhaps I should say you must submit for a time to being mildly bored, Mr. Casaubon. I shall visit again tomorrow. Rest.
I'll see you out, Doctor.
You must send for me at once if you experience any new symptoms, Mr. Casaubon.
Thank you. You must unbend a little, Casaubon, you know. Yes, yes. Backgammon now. Get Dorothea to play backgammon. Or read you light things. Smollett. Roderick Random. Humphrey Clinker. They are excellent. A little broad, but she may read anything now she's married, you know.
I beseech you to speak quite plainly, Dr. Lydgate. Do you feel the illness might return? I can't bear to think there might be something I'm ignorant of, which, if known, might have made me act differently.
Mrs. Casaubon, I shall take you at your word. But I must ask you to observe that cases of this kind are the most difficult to pronounce on. Your husband may live another 15 years or more, without much worse health than he has endured hitherto.
You mean, if he does very little... But he would be miserable if he gave up his work.
I'm aware of that. He has my sympathy. Not to work is a terrible burden for those devoted to it. Briefly, his heart may get no worse, or it may deteriorate swiftly. It is one of those cases where death is sometimes sudden.
Oh, I knew it was serious.
I'm sorry, I've distressed you too much.
No, no. I'm so grateful to you for your honesty. Help me, please. Tell me what I can do.
What do you think of foreign travel? You've lately been in Rome, I think. Perhaps.
Oh, that wouldn't do. That would be worse, worse than anything. Nothing will be any use that he doesn't enjoy.
Mrs. Casaubon, I wish I could have spared you this pain, but we must not tell Mr. Casaubon. I think anxiety is an unfavourable state for this kind of condition. You must bear the burden alone.
Of course.
I'm sorry. I'll return tomorrow.
Oh, you're wise. You're familiar with life and death. Advise me. Think what I can do. He's been labouring all his life and looking forward to his great work. He minds about nothing else, and I mind about nothing else. Tell me, please tell me what I can do.
I spoke hastily when I said alone. I will help you all I can. Of course I will.
Dr. Wrench calls it a slight derangement and doesn't even speak of coming tomorrow. And Fred doesn't eat and sits and shivers and looks so unhappy. Oh, it's enough to break a mother's heart. I shall call Dr. Sprague. I shall. I'm not happy with Wrench at all. Look, send for your father.
Oh, nonsense, Mother. It's nothing. I'll soon be all right. If it's a cold, damp ride from Hounslow, that's all.
Mama? There is Mr. Lydgate stopping his horse to speak to someone in the street.
Oh. Dr. Lydgate! Dr. Lydgate, pray come in and look at my boy Fred.
Directly, Mrs. Vincey.
Oh, he's very poorly. And a mother's instinct is never wrong.
He must not be moved from bed, Mrs. Vincey. And no solid food. Water with a dash of milk if he will take it. He must have constant nursing, and everyone in the house must wash their hands most carefully. I've left a new prescription for him.
Lucy?
Oh, Vincey, you're back at last. Fred is so very ill.
Why? What ails the boy?
I'm sorry to say, Fred is in the pink-skinned stage of typhoid fever, Mr. Vincey.
And has taken just the wrong sort of medicines. What have I done to Wrench that he should use me so? And my boy might have been stretched a corpse.
It will worry you to death, Lucy, that I can see. Wrench will know what I think of the matter, whatever excuses he gives me.
Yesterday's symptoms may have been disguising the disease. I'll write to Wrench and tell him what's been done, shall I?
But you must come again. You must go on attending Fred. Vincey, I can't have my boy left to someone who may come or may not. You are his doctor now.
Pray, make that arrangement with Wrench, Dr. Lydgate. I must get Mama to rest a while. And, Papa, you must find a nurse for Fred at once.
I shall return this evening. But you may call for me at any time, Miss Vincey.
Uncle?
Well, my dear?
I've been looking through Edward's outstanding correspondence. There's a letter from Will Ladislaw. Mm-hmm. He is to settle in England now and proposes a visit to Lowick unless a message addressed to a poste-restante in Paris within the next fortnight hinders him. May I show you the letter?
Yes. Oh, yes. Let me see. Writes a good letter, I'll be bound. I remember him sketching at Lowick. He's a clever young fellow, this Ladislaw, with a finger in all sorts of pies. Reminds me of myself at his age. A rising young man, I dare say. Says here he has Casaubon's Aquinas portrait to deliver. Excellent! That'll be a tonic, eh?
No. Uncle, you must write to Mr. Ladislaw and say his cousin's been very ill and we can't receive any visitors. Will you do that for me?
Of course, my dear. Of course I'll write. Pity. Yes, of course I'll write. The letter. Yes. He's a rising man and full of ideas and plans, no doubt, if he's looking to settle in England now. Still, I shall write and tell him about Casaubon. You can count on me for that.
I think the Honourable Mrs. S. on page 6 is something like you, Miss Vincey.
I suspect you of being an adroit flatterer, Mr. Plimdale. Oh, Mr. Lydgate, what a latecomer you are. How is Fred?
Going on well, but slowly. He should go away for a while to lift his spirits. What's this? Keepsake.
Mr. Lydgate has been our guardian angel during Fred's illness, Mr. Plimdale. What are you laughing at so profanely, sir?
Which is the most ridiculous, I wonder, the pictures or the words?
There are many celebrated people writing for the keepsake, sir. It's the first time I've heard it called ridiculous.
Was it your book? I'm sorry, I didn't think. But
my mother indicates we are to leave. Good evening, sir. Miss Vincey.
Yes, I'm coming, mother. I'm wearing this.
You've given offence. How rash you are, like a bear.
I am a bear, and want teaching by the birds. And here's a bird may teach me what she will. Don't I come to her house and listen willingly to the sound of her lovely song?
But I tremble before you, who have heard the best music in Paris. I've only once been to London.
Tell me what you saw.
Oh, very little. Why are you smiling?
Most young women would have said, oh, everything.
Only a few of the ordinary sights, such as raw country girls, are always taken to.
Do you call yourself a raw country girl?
Lydgate, how's Fred?
Better, Fairbrother. I've been telling Miss Vincey.
The party's breaking up and I'm walking your way. We haven't spoken for some time. Would you walk with me?
Of course. Good night, Miss Vincey.
Mr. Lydgate?
So, Fairbrother, did you win at cards again tonight?
You disapprove of playing for money?
I'm well aware the hospital chaplaincy passing to Tyke means you've lost the chance of a salary. And I'm heartily sorry for my part in it, Fairbrother. I hope you can forgive me.
Nothing to forgive, except you avoiding me since then. It won't do, Lydgate.
I've been very busy. Surprisingly busy.
Yes. Attending the Casaubons and the Chethams and Stone Court, as well as Fred Vincey. Your practice is flourishing. You've made many friends in Middlemarch.
And enemies, as you predicted. And now Wrench calls me dishonourable for treating a patient of his without permission.
But if you save a life and do your work well, as you said, certain of your own worth, these things will abate in time. Here's my door, Lydgate. Would you be so kind as to step in and take a nightcap with me? I shan't delay you long from your experiments, I promise. A little port. I hope you don't mind that I prefer my study to the living room. I have my scientific experiments too, Lydgate, you see, though they're frivolous beside yours. See this pier glass, multitudinously scratched in all directions by the housemaid's cloth? But place a candle beside it, and lo, what do you observe?
The scratches arrange themselves in concentric circles.
Round that little sun. Now, we know the scratches are going everywhere impartially, and that the order is an illusion of optical selection.
Your point?
It's a parable. My scratches are events, actions, words, looks. And my candle is the egoism of someone, anyone, looking on. Miss Vincey, for example.
Oh.
This evening, Mrs. Plimdale was asking Mrs. Vincey if you and Rosamond were engaged.
Engaged? How ridiculous.
As I thought. Nothing's further from your mind, or I wouldn't have spoken. But in the eyes of Middlemarch, either an engagement will shortly be announced, or poor Rosie will be compromised. You will have spoiled her chances elsewhere, in Mrs. Plimdale's particular words. I felt I should warn you.
Damnation! How I hate the small provincial turn of mind. I have work to do.
Then lash yourself back to the mast, Lydgate, and sail past such distractions, man.
Missy, are you there?
I'm here, sir. What can I fetch you?
Where's Fred? Where's the lad? I want him here now.
I told you. Fred's been poorly, Mr. Featherstone. He can't come for a while.
A while's no good. You come here, Mary Garth. Now, you hearken, Missy. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I've got all my faculties, and I know where all my property lies, and I've made arrangements ready to change my mind and do as I like at the last. Do you hear, Missy?
Well, sir?
I've made 2 wills, and you're going to burn one for me. Now, take the keys.
No, sir, I can't do that.
I tell you, you must. I shall do as I like at the last. Take the keys.
No, sir, I can't do anything that might lay me open to suspicion.
Look here, Missy. Take the money, the notes and the gold. Look here, it's pretty nigh 200. Take it. You shall have it. Do as I tell you. I shall do as I like. Look here. Yeah. Then call the young chap. Call Fred Vincey.
Hush, sir. In the morning I will call Fred and your lawyer. Let me give you some cordial now, and you'll perhaps sleep a while.
Lawyer, no. I want no damned lawyer. Nobody shall know. Nobody. I shall do as I like.
I like to go anywhere with you, Mrs. Cadwallader, but I don't like funerals. Even when one can look down on them from a window and not have to be there. Dodo, you'll like it. I'm sure it's so melancholy. It's just your sort of thing.
I'm fond of knowing something about the people I live amongst, Celia, that's all. I only know the tenants at Lowick. These people are strangers to me.
You rich Lowick farmers are as curious as buffalo and bison, Mrs. Casaubon. Monsters! Farmers without landlords? One can't tell how to class them, eh, Sir James?
Many of these people are from the town, or a distance. Featherstone left a good deal of money as well as land, I've heard.
Here you all are. What a sight, eh?
Ah, Brook! Come to watch the funeral from the expensive seats.
No, I came to look after Casaubon and to bring a little news. A little news, my dear.
Edward is in the library, Uncle.
I found him there. Told him it wouldn't do on such a sunny day. He's coming up here. I told him he must. Fact is, my dear...
Oh, look! Here's Humphrey coming out of church. He looks like an ugly archangel in that surplice, towering over Featherstone's wonderfully mixed set. There's a man there with a little round head and bulging eyes. Looks just like a frog. Positively new in these parts, don't you think? Oh, do look. There's a handsome woman, though, and a very fair young man. Who are they, Sir James?
Well, I see Vincey over there, the mayor of Middlemarch. They're probably his wife and son. Decent enough in manufacturing. A coursing fellow, though.
Come, we can't all afford red coats and tall hunters, Chetham. A very good fellow is Vincey.
One of your secret Whig committee, is he, Brooke?
A solemn thing, though, a funeral. If you take it in that light, you know.
But I'm not taking it in that light. I can't wear my solemnity too often, else it will go to rags. It was time the old man died. None of the faces down there look very sorry.
It's the most dismal thing I ever saw, that anyone should die like this and leave no love behind.
Oh, look! Why, Dodo, you never told me that Mr. Ladislaw was come again.
What? Surely...
Ah, Casaubon, you're here. Take a seat.
Thank you.
You shouldn't spend the day in that dark library, you know.
Uncle!
Ah, Ladislaw. Now, yes... I wrote to him, my dear, as you asked, and I found myself inviting him to Tipton instead. He puts up with me at the Grange, and we've brought the picture atop of the carriage to surprise you, Casaubon.
Uncle, how could you?
There you are to the very life as Aquinas, you know, and you will hear young Ladislaw talk about it. He talks uncommonly well. Knows art, that kind of thing, companionable, you know, up with you in any track. What I've been wanting a long time.
You are exceedingly hospitable, my dear sir. And I owe you acknowledgements for extending your hospitality to my relative.
And who is Mr. Ladislaw?
Young relative of Casaubon's.
There, behind the frog face, man.
Ah, very pretty sprig. What's your nephew to be, Casaubon?
Pardon me, he is not my nephew. He's my cousin.
Well, you know, he's trying his wings. Just the sort of young fellow to rise. I should be glad to give him the opportunity. He'll make an excellent secretary now. Like Hobbes, Milton, Swift, that sort of man.
I understand now. Someone who can write speeches.
Wouldn't come in until I announced him. I'll fetch him in now, eh, Casaubon?
I felt I should look in on Fred since I was passing, but they tell me he's not here. The maid thought... I'm sorry to have disturbed you, Miss Vincey. Good day.
Mr. Lydgate, please. Wait a moment. It's been so long since you came to visit us.
Yes, I regret. I've had work to do. I've had to give up going out in the evening, except, of course, on my rounds. How is Fred?
Oh, Fred is... Fred...
What's the matter? You're distressed. Tell me, pray.
I've been so unhappy. I thought... The way we spoke... I imagined... But you don't love me at all. You don't love me.
Dear. Rosamond, dearest child.
They are all pitying me. I want to die.
Shh. No. No. Shh. I didn't understand. I'm a bear, remember? I thought you were taking things as lightly as... I had no idea. Did not flatter myself that your happiness depended on me. You must believe that. Dearest Rosamond, don't cry, please. Your eyes are like forget-me-nots under the water. Let me kiss the tears away. There. And again. Lovely, perfect Rosamond. See? I am yours after all. I shall never try to leave you again.
The will I hold in my hand
was drawn up by myself and executed by our deceased friend on the 9th of August, 1825. But I find there is a subsequent instrument, hitherto unknown to me, bearing the date 20th of July, 1826. And there is a codicil to this latter will bearing the date March the 1st, 1828. I shall begin by reading the earlier will, since such, as appears by his not having destroyed the document, was the intention of the deceased. This is the last will and testament of me, Peter Josiah Featherstone, of Stone Court Manor, Middlemarch, Loamshire, landowner and farmer.
Mr. Vincey, you're not to take snuff.
I'm just taking out the box, Lucy.
Mary, his talk of the frogman being Uncle Featherstone's love child. Love child, look at him. What is it, Mary? You're very serious and pale.
I, Peter Josiah Featherstone, of Stone Court, being of sound mind, do hereby give and bequeath the following. To each of my sisters and brothers, names appended, the sum of £200. To each of my nieces and nephews, names appended, the sum of £100. To Miss Rosamond Vincey, £100.
Oh, he had a good heart. Now, what of Fred?
Hush, Lucy.
To Mr. Frederick Vincey, the sum of £10,000 in specified investments.
Oh, don't cry, sister, don't cry. It isn't the land. There's hope yet.
The residue of all my personal possessions, investments, the freehold manor farm estate known as Stone Court, and all land, livestock, and buildings pertaining thereto, I give and bequeath to Joshua Rigg, on the condition he henceforth take the name of Featherstone. The said Joshua Rigg Featherstone is hereby named sole executor of this, my last will and testament.
Well, there's the second will, Standish. We haven't heard Peter's last wishes yet. That will is superseded, I think.
Indeed. All this is most singular, but legally the most recent will drawn up without my knowledge must be respected.
Well, then read it at once.
It's very brief. I, Peter Josiah Featherstone, bequeath all my land lying in Lowick Parish with all stock and household goods to Joshua Rigg, henceforth to be called Featherstone. Accepting only the sum of £10,000 to be devoted to the erection and endowment of almshouses for old men, to be called Featherstone's Almshouses, and to be built on a piece of land near Middlemarch Town, already purchased for the purpose.
Well, Lucy, Fred must set his mind now to going up next term and passing his examination. I've taken my resolutions and he must make his.
Oh, don't be hard on the poor boy, Vincey. Fred will turn out well yet, even though that wicked old man has deceived him. Else why was my boy brought back from the grave? And who has handsomer children than ours? Mr. Lydgate has kept the highest company and comes from wealthy relations, and he fell in love with Rosamond at once.
Damn relations, I've had enough of them. I can't pay Fred's bills and Rose's wedding costs. We may all be ruined, for what I know. The country's in that state. Parliament's dissolved and machine breaking everywhere, and an election coming up.
Oh, my dear, you seemed as proud as could be about the engagement. And Rosamond has begun to buy in the best linen and cambric.
Not at my expense. If your sister's husband Bulstrode hadn't pushed him forward, I might have been more careful.
But we called Dr. Lydgate in to attend Fred, and I'm sure that was a mercy. Rosamond will take it hard, Vincey. And you know you never could bear to cross her.
Yes, I could. The sooner that engagement's off, the better. I don't believe Lydgate will ever make an income. He makes enemies. That's all I hear of his making. Be sure and tell Rosie what I say.
Of course, dear. I'll tell her at once.
Oh, confound it, Lucy! What can I do when new men come into the town without any asking of mine?
Well, it's the end of the world, Hawley. The old king dead, Wellington and Peel put out to pasture, and the new king weak as water over reform. And now here's the Pioneer started up publishing again with an article calling for men of weight to throw it behind Brooke and Bedlam.
Brooke's bought the Pioneer. That means mischief, eh? He's got the freak of being a popular man now, after dangling about like a stray tortoise.
Got a brilliant young fellow to edit it, they say.
Name's Ladislaw. Of foreign extraction, the sort, Standish. Begins with flourishing about the rights of man and ends with murdering a wench.
Master's out, sir. There's only Mrs. Casaubon in the library.
Very well.
Now this confounded rain.
Mr. Ladislaw!
I didn't mean to disturb you. I came to sketch, but the rain drove me in.
I'm indebted to it, then. I'm so glad to see you.
I really came for a chance of seeing you alone. I wanted to talk about things, as we did in Rome. It always makes a difference when other people are present.
Yes. Sit down. I'm so very sorry Mr. Casaubon has kept you at a distance from us.
Yes.
I read Latin now, a little. But I'm finding it very difficult to be learned.
Oh, why trouble to follow old paths when there are always new places we can explore freely? Unexplored countries of our own imaginings.
It's always been my dream to do some great work in the world. Or help someone else to.
You may carry that sort of help too far, you know. You're not too much shut up. You already look paler.
What does that matter? He needs help, and it's all I can do for him. He objects to a secretary.
I used to be his secretary. I turned out not to be good enough. I'm sure you are much better.
You were not a steady worker enough.
I saw he didn't like someone overlooking his work. I may not be good for much, but he dislikes me for another reason, because I disagree with him. Though he has shown a sense of justice in family matters. My father's mother was disinherited for marrying a Polish refugee, and my father died when I was very young.
Do you remember much about him?
He was musical. I remember his slow walk and his long, thin hands. And one day when he was lying ill, I remember crying, not for him, but because I was so hungry.
Mr. Casaubon could not have known about you then.
No. Soon after, my father made himself known to Mr. Casaubon, and that was my last hungry day.
Is your mother still living?
No, she died by an accident, a fall 4 years ago. She had run away from her family too, though she would never say why. You see, I come of rebellious blood on both sides.
You know Mr. Casaubon's been very ill.
Yes. And I will never, never again, if I can help it, do or say anything you would disapprove of concerning my cousin.
That's very good of you. I shall have a little kingdom to rule over then until you grow tired of staying at the Grange.
That's the reason I wish to speak with you alone. Mr. Brooke has bought one of the Middlemarch papers and has asked me to stay on and edit it and generally support his standing for Parliament. If you wouldn't like me to accept his proposal, I'll give it up.
I should like you to stay very much.
And I'll say yes.
But you should, of course, be guided by Mr. Casaubon.
Rosamond, dear, your eyelids are red.
Oh, Tertius, Papa has been more irritable lately. Mm. Fred and he quarrel and...
Go on.
Papa says our engagement must be given up.
Does he? Will you give it up?
I never give up anything that I choose to do.
God bless you. It's too late now for your father to interfere. You're of age, and I've taken old Mrs. Breton's house you liked so much in Lowick Gate. We can marry at once and be always together, ordering our own lives as we will. You won't mind about new clothes and linen. Those can be bought afterwards. Rosie, let's hasten the whole thing. Let's be together soon, Rosie.
How original you clever men are. This is the first time I've ever heard of wedding clothes being bought after the marriage. And there's the wedding journey to arrange.
I suppose we must be away a week or two.
Oh, more than that. Oh, I should so like to go to Qualingham. No, Tertius, be serious. I hope your uncle, Sir Godwin, will not look down on me. Does he even know we are to be married?
No.
Perhaps you are a little ashamed of me. I forget that.
Nonsense, Rosie. I'm bored with my relations, that's all. No, Uncle Godwin's a good-natured old thing.
Then do send him word, you naughty, undutiful nephew. He may invite us without your asking.
Dear Mr. Ladislaw, Mrs. Casaubon informs me a proposal has been made to you which involves your residence in this neighbourhood and touches my position in such a way as renders it natural I should state at once your acceptance would be highly offensive to me. That I have the right to such a veto would not, I believe, be denied by any reasonable person cognizant of the relations between us. Relations which...
Edward? Do you feel ill, dear?
No, I have been writing letters.
As you're still up, may I speak to you?
Certainly.
It's about money. I've been thinking all day that we have so much, I have too much, and that Mr. Ladislaw should not be poor whilst we are rich, just because your Aunt Julia loved a certain man long ago.
Mr. Ladislaw has no doubt been putting this case to you.
No. How can you think that? When he's declined your allowance and taken a position, it just seems to me right that we should share our good fortune with him.
Dorothea, my love. This is not the first occasion, but it were well it were the last, on which you have assumed a judgment on subjects beyond your scope. It is not for you to interfere between me and Mr. Ladislaw, and still less to encourage communications from him to you which constitute a criticism on my procedure.
Dear Mr. Casaubon, I have given all due consideration to your letter of yesterday, and though I do not believe that any change in our relations could occur which can nullify the obligations imposed on me by the past, pardon me for not seeing that those obligations should restrain me from the ordinary freedom of living where I choose. Regretting this difference between us, I remain yours, with persistent obligation, Will Ladislaw.
I can't talk to you both as I want in front of Celia. Oh. It might hurt her. Indeed, it would not be right.
I know what you are meaning, Sir James. The pioneer at the Grange. Mm. What an unfortunate turn for Brooke to take in his dotage. Mm-hmm. Lying in bed all day playing dominoes like Lord Plessy would be more private and more bearable to his friends.
Now I see they're beginning their attacks on him in the Trumpet, too. Mm. Well, he might have considered there are tremendous sarcasms to be published against a reforming landlord who receives his own rents and makes no returns. But, seriously, is he really going to be nominated? Fairbrother's a Whig, and he says that even though Bulstrode's backing Brooke, he'll come off badly at a nomination.
Exactly. I've never known anything about Middlemarch politics before, Cadwallader, the county, being my business. Mm. But I've been making inquiries for Celia's sake, and Hawley tells me plainly that if Brooke wanted a pelting, he could get it cheaper than by going to the hustings.
Mm. I warned you all. I said to Humphrey long ago that Brooke was strolling towards the mud patch.
Well, maybe the Trumpet will shame him into doing better for his land and tenants, at any rate.
I want him to take on Garth again. He got rid of Garth 12 years ago for costing him too much in improvements. And nothing has improved since. I'm thinking of getting Garth to manage for me.
If Dorothea had kept near her uncle, there would have been some chance. She was always uneasy about the estate. Now Aquinas takes up all her time.
What I care for most is his own dignity. He doesn't seem to see the danger he's in, and persuasion's no use.
No, there's an odd mixture of obstinacy and changeableness in Brooke. What about this Ladislaw? Is he pushing?
I've been speaking with Ladislaw. He seems clever enough for anything, but even he thinks Brooke shouldn't stand this time. And that's another thing. We've had Ladislaw once or twice to dine at the Hall, and now I hear Middlemarch is painting him as a quill-driving alien and a foreign spy.
Look, Casaubon won't like that.
Well, there is some foreign blood in Ladislaw. His mother was English, but they say she was in the theatre. Oh. And he's as likely to be found playing with the urchins in the street or lying on the hearthrug at the Lydgates' house as conducting himself like a gentleman.
Oh, he's a dangerous young sprig with all his opera songs and his ready tongue. One doesn't know where to place him. And Thomas Aquinas isn't fond of him. I could see that the day the picture was brought.
Well, that's just it. Casaubon's no help. He's washed his hands of his cousin. And now Brooke's put a sort of relation of the family up for journalism, battling with the grubby likes of Price on the Trumpet. I call Ladislaw a fool for accepting the post. Mm.
I expect you did it to annoy Aquinas.
Mm. Oh, well, don't let's make too much of all this. The beef is too good to spoil with politics. Mm. Brooke and Ladislaw will soon tire of each other. Ladislaw will take wing, Brooke will sell the Pioneer, and everything will settle down as usual. Trust me. More wine, Chatham? Mm.
These records on the hangings need to be collated, Ladislaw. I always kept careful records, you know, pleading and that sort of thing. I made it my business to attend such things. Went into reforming the law a lot one time. Can't let him off scot-free, of course, but a man shouldn't hang for stealing a sheep to feed his family, eh?
Laws are made for the rich, Mr. Brooke. Until the sheep stealer gets the vote, then maybe we can hang a man for owning more sheep than he and his family can eat in 20 generations.
Well, no. I wouldn't go that far. That's too far, Ladislaw. That's French, you know. Too dangerous, that kind of talk.
The danger of democracy, sir.
Yes. Well...
Uncle?
Mrs. Casaubon.
Well, my dear, this is pleasant now.
Sir James has left me here with his carriage. I'm on my way to Freshett to visit Celia and take a present for the baby.
He left Casaubon with his books, I suppose. That's right. Can't have you getting too learned for a woman. Hey, Ladislaw.
Mrs. Casaubon.
Mr. Ladislaw. There's no fear of getting learned, Uncle. I'm very slow. I find concentration on books much duller than drawing cottage plans.
It was quite her hobby at one time, Ladislaw, you know. Drawing plans. Ladislaw and I are alike, my dear. He likes to go into everything, too. We're working on capital punishment. Yes. We shall do a great deal together.
Yes. Sir James has told me he's in high hopes of seeing a great change made soon in the management of the estate. That you are going to have the farms valued, and repairs made, and cottages improved. Tipton will be quite another place. Oh, it would be enough to make me take to riding again, to go around with you and see all that. Because Sir James says you are going to employ Mr. Garth, who has praised my cottages. Oh, Uncle, it's all so thrilling.
Chatham is a little too hasty, my dear. A little hasty, you know? I never said I should do anything of the kind. I never said I would not do it, you know?
He feels confident you will do it, and so do I. Because you mean to enter Parliament as a member who cares for the improvement of people's lives. We cannot urge wider changes for good until we have tried to alter evils which lie under our own hands.
There's something in what you say, my dear. Something. But not everything. Eh, Ladislaw? You and I don't like our plans being found fault with by young ladies who are a little ardent, one-sided, you know? Eh, what?
The keeper has found one of Dagley's boys with a lever in his hand, sir. Just killed.
I'll come. I shan't let him off easily, though, you know.
I presume you know that Mr. Casaubon has forbidden me to go to his house.
No. I did not. I'm so sorry.
He claims to be displeased at my taking a position which he considers unsuited to my rank as his cousin. And as rank is the very thing I'm conspiring here to undermine, I have told him I cannot give way on that point. It's a little too hard on me to expect that my course in life should be hampered by prejudices which I consider ridiculous.
It's better for us not to speak on the subject since you and Mr. Casaubon disagree. You intend to remain?
Yes. But I shall hardly ever see you now.
No. But I shall hear of you. I shall know what you are doing for my uncle.
But I shall know nothing about you. No one will tell me anything. No one mentions you in my company.
Oh, my life is very simple. I'm always at Lowick.
It makes me angry. It's a dreadful imprisonment.
No, don't think that. I have no longings. Except that I dislike having more than my share of the riches of the world. But I have discovered a belief of my own and it comforts me.
Will you tell me what it is?
That by desiring what is perfectly good, even if we don't know what it is, and can't act to bring it about. By desiring it merely, and passionately, we are part of the divine power against evil, widening the skirts of light and making the struggle with darkness narrower.
That's a beautiful mysticism.
Don't call it by any name. It's my life. I found it out, and can't part with it. I've always been trying to find a religion since I was a girl. I hardly pray at all now. But I hold fast to my belief. It may be foolish. I only mention it that you might know perfectly well how my days go at Lowick.
God bless you for telling me.
What's your religion? I mean, what's the belief that helps you most?
To love what is good and beautiful when I see it. But I'm a rebel. I don't feel bound to submit, as you do, to what I don't like. I prefer to seek beauty actively.
There you are. I have to go and speak with Dagley now, my dear. Poaching's a little against my feeling, you know, but I shall be lenient, of course.
Ride with me, Uncle. I must go on to the hall now and return Sir James's carriage. Celia's expecting me. Pray, excuse us, Mr. Ladislaw.
Dagley, my good fellow. A word.
I'm a good fella, am I? Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'm glad to hear I'm a good fella.
Yes. Well, your lad, Jacob, has been caught killing a leveret, Dagley. I had Johnson lock him in the empty stable an hour or two, just to frighten him, you know. But he'll be brought home by and by, and you'll look after him, will you? And give him a reprimand, you know.
No, I won't. I'll be damned if I'll leather my boy to please you or anybody else. Not if you was 20 landlords instead of one.
Hush, Dudley! You're drunk. These are been to market, Mr. Brooke.
Good day, Mrs. Dagley. I came to speak about your boy. I didn't want him beaten, you know, Dagley.
I should like to know what my boy's done, sir.
Never you mind what he's done. I'll have my say, and what I say is, I've lived on this land for my father and grandfather afore me and dropped me money into it. And me and my children might lie and rot on the ground for top dressing as we can't afford if this king wasn't going to put a stop to you with this here reform.
My good fellow, you're drunk, you know. Another day. Another day.
You go Middlemarch and ask for your character, Brooke. You better let my boy alone and look to your centre before the reform gets up on your back. That's what you got to say. Now, good day, sir. Tear off!
Have you made up your mind, my dear?
Yes. I'll go to the school at York, Mother. A school will be better than a family. It's £35 a year and extra pay for teaching piano to the smallest ones.
You wouldn't be happy without doing your duty, my dear.
Susan.
Caleb. What is it? What does your letter say?
Look for yourself. What do you think, Susan? He writes handsomely, doesn't he?
Oh, Mary, see here. Oh, Sir James Chettam has written to ask your father to manage the Freshett and Tipton estates. Oh, he did his work so well, they feel the want of him and cannot manage without him after all.
Oh, Father!
Now, mind you ask fair pay, Caleb.
Oh, yes, sir. Between £400 and £500, the two together. That's a great gift of God, Susan. Oh,
that it is, Caleb, and a reward for you and your work in the past.
I shall want help by and by, and Mary can write and give that school up. Stay and help your mother. Oh, there, I'm pleased as punch now I thought of that.
Good morning.
Fairbrother!
Mr. Fairbrother, we're very pleased to see you. Now, please, take a seat.
I come as an envoy, Mrs. Garth. I have something to say to you and Mr. Garth on behalf of Fred Vincey.
Oh, I haven't seen the lad for months. Couldn't think what would become of him.
Well, home was a little too warm for him after Featherstone died and left him nothing. He's been away on a visit. But yesterday he came and poured himself out to me, and I'm very glad he did. And he asked me to come and tell you he's going away and that he's so miserable about his debt to you that he can't bear to come himself. Not until he can pay it off in full.
Tell him it doesn't signify a farthing. We've had the pinch and got over it. And now, I'm going to be as rich as Croesus. Brooke and Chettam want me back.
Which means that we are going to have enough money to bring up the boys well and keep Mary at home with us.
Oh, I congratulate you heartily, Garth. This is the best sort of news I could have had to carry to Fred before he leaves.
Where's the lad going?
He means to try again for his degree, though he says, frankly, he doesn't think he's fit to join the church. Fred quoted what you said to him, Miss Garth, that he'd be one of those ridiculous clergymen who helped to make the whole clergy ridiculous. Really, that was so cutting, I felt a little cut myself.
She gets her tongue from you, Susan.
Not its flippancy, Father.
It was a hasty remark, Mary. We shouldn't value our vicar the less because there was a ridiculous curate in the next parish.
Yeah, something in it, though. Bad apple makes us look harder at the whole box, you know. We all connect up somehow. I can't exactly say what I mean, but Mary's right in a way. Things hang together. ¶¶
bath?
You used to call me Mary, Mr. Fairbrother. Please, call me Mary always.
Well, Mary, this is a happy day to have called on my favourite parishioners. The news of your father's good fortune will be such a relief to Fred.
Which is more than he deserves.
So hard on the boy, Mary. Come now, I know your heart cannot resist kindness. Have you any message to give your old playfellow?
Yes. Tell him I'm very glad to hear that he's going away to work and make something of himself at last, instead of living off others.
Very well. If that is all, I'm very glad you're not going away to work.
No, I'm not. Oh, I can hardly believe it yet. I thought it would always be part of my life to live in strange houses and long for a home. But losing that grief has left me rather empty.
Then it will be the duty of all your friends here to fill that gap. Visit us at the vicarage as often as you can. Now you're a lady of leisure, Mary. You are the best of all possible guests for my mother and me.
Do you know what I'm thinking of, Susan?
Crop rotations.
That I could do a great turn for Fred Vincey.
Caleb.
Christy's gone teaching, Alfred is to be an engineer, and Ben can't help me yet. Fred might come in and learn the nature of things, and it might be the making of him into a useful man. What do you think?
I think there's hardly anything honest that his family would object to more. They want him a fine gentleman and think we're beneath them. His mother will say we wanted Fred for Mary.
There's no sort of work that could ever be done well if you minded what fools say. You must have it inside you that your plan is right and stick to it.
Perhaps you should wait until you're sure of your own position. Let Fred go to college and finish something he started first.
That may be better. Well, the work is coming thick and fast. Only yesterday that rig, or rig Featherstone, asked me to value stone cord. And what do you think? Bulstrode was before him. So I'm going to do it for Bulstrode. Whether it's for mortgage or purchase, I can't tell yet. There are great changes afoot, Susan.
Can that man be going to sell the land just left him? Now he's taken Featherstone's name?
Deuce knows. But Bulstrode's long been wanting to get a decent bit of land in his hands, that I do know. And it's a difficult matter in this part of the country. Old Featherstone hated him and would never bank with him. So it would be curious if Stone Cord got into his hands, eh?
Why should the old man hate someone he had no dealings with?
The soul of man. The soul of man, when it gets fairly rotten, will bear you all sorts of poisonous toadstools, Susan. And you can never tell whence blew in the seed thereof.
Pardon me, madam. Gentlemen. Is there more room? I thank you. Tighter than the coats and prodigiously more smell, eh? Eh? Still, there are remedies. Would you... would you care to partake? Brandy of the very best, Donna Bright, because my stepson, Josh, only has the best these days. No? Then if you'll excuse a weary traveller. Oh, yeah. This locomotion. Way forward, they say. Used to be a forward man myself, but now I'm more of a staying put and swapping pleasantries over a jar individual. Must have a niche to retire to in my riper years, you see. They say a railway carriage is worse than being on a boat and twice as dangerous to life and limb. I was in Middlemarch this morning, but I was sent away sharpish by my boy Josh. Josh is a very forward man. Oh, yes, inherited a fortune, did the boy. And all because his mother, once my good wife, was friendly long ago with a farmer of this parish, if you get my drift, eh? Ah, well, farmers died with no heirs of the legitimate breed, Honour Bright. So illegitimate Josh is now, if you please, the prize bullock, the chosen man. Plain, ugly Josh Rigg, who wouldn't touch my name when I was looking after his welfare. He's now Mr. Joshua Rigg Featherstone la-di-da-di-da. And does he help his friends now he's gone up in the world, you ask? What do you think, madam? I got nothing but the brandy. A sovereign for the trip south and a flea in my ear is a brassy bullion rogue. And all I did was to show him my foot when he was a lad needed chastising. What could a father do more? That Featherstone, what did he ever do for him? Apart from breeding him and leaving him a house he doesn't want and a fortune he's too stupid to spend without the help of his betters, eh? But he bears me a grudge, Josh. That I know. And blood's thicker than water, eh? Whatever they say. And that's what I found out. Ingratitude. A serpent's tooth and so forth. Your health and mine, ladies and gents. Name's Raffles. John Raffles. WAG at your service, ma'am. And anyone else who pay my hostelry bills. Here we go. Like a bullet, straight to perdition. Yeah.
I'm amazed you part with this beautiful place so soon, Mr. Rigg.
Rigg Featherstone, if you will, Mr. Bulstrode. I respect the old man's wishes in that case, but in the case of his property, looks like a sink to pour money down to me.
To me, Stone Court looks like paradise.
Should have asked for more brass then, sir, eh? But never mind. I have plenty, and I'm on my way to more. I'll tell you how it is, see. Some men look at gold and think of turning it to land, but I look on land and think of turning it to gold. Right from being an errand boy, I used to look in the moneylender's windows. I've always wanted a money changer's shop on the quay of some busy port, and to handle coin of all the nations while others look through my iron lattice and envy me my trade. Come, shake hands. A clean sail's a real pleasure to me, and to you too, no doubt. Your line of business not being so different from my ambitions, eh?
My wife is glad of the advantage to my health of purchasing Stone Court. To each his own, Mr. Rigg. Featherstone. How little we know the paradise of our neighbours. This property is my Eden, and I intend to see it flourish under my doubtless unworthy hands.
Casaubon.
Mr. Lydgate, I am exceedingly obliged to you for your punctuality.
Mrs. Casaubon said I might find you exercising in the yew tree walk, sir. It's a lovely afternoon.
We will, if you please, carry on our conversation in walking to and fro.
I hope your wish to see me is not due to the return of unpleasant symptoms.
Not immediately, no. In order to account for that wish, I must mention that my life, on all collateral accounts insignificant, derives a possible importance from labours which have extended through all my best years.
May I infer you are thinking of the possible hindrances to your work from want of health?
Thank you, yes. You have not implied to me as yet that the symptoms were those of any fatal disease. But were it so, Mr. Lydgate, I should desire to know that truth without reservation. I have long had on hand a work which I would fain leave behind me in such a state, at least, that it might be committed to the press by others. I request your complete honesty as a friendly service. If you can tell me my life isn't threatened, of course, I shall rejoice. If not, knowledge of the truth is of the utmost importance to me and my life's work.
Then I no longer hesitate as to my course. I believe that you are suffering from what is called fatty degeneration of the heart, Mr. Casaubon. A disease divined and explored by Lyonek, the man who gave us the stethoscope not so many years ago. Little is known on the subject even now, though studies are progressing apace. But after what you have said, it is my duty to tell you that death from this disease is often sudden.
I see.
But no such result can be predicted. Your condition may be stable for 15 years, or more.
I thank you, Mr. Lydgate. One thing more I have still to ask. Did you communicate what you have now told me to Mrs. Casaubon?
Partly. I mean, as to the possible issues, yes.
I thought that as...
Thank you. I thank you. It is, as you say, a most beautiful afternoon.
Forgive me, Dr. Lydgate, for troubling you at this hour.
Mrs. Casaubon, please, come into my study and sit down. Forgive the mess. I'm packing for the move after my wedding. Is your husband worse since I saw him this morning?
No. Thank you. Might I ask what was said at that interview?
Mr. Casaubon wished to consult me on the nature of the disease. I gave your husband the same reply I gave you, that the outcome is unpredictable and it is fruitful to proceed hopefully. Are you sure his condition hasn't deteriorated? He seemed to take the news with calmness, but...
After you left, I went out to him, and he would not look at me or speak or even let me touch him. He locked me out. He sent word he was eating in the library, so I went to sit outside and wait. He hasn't come out, and I'm so afraid.
My dear Mrs. Casaubon, I'm sure it's just shock. You mustn't fear...
Help me! Guide me, or I shall learn to hate.
I won't believe that.
What have I done? What am I that he should treat me so cruelly? He never knows what I think. He never cares. What's the use? He wishes he'd never married me. It's his fault, not mine. If he'd just drawn me to him, I would never have judged him. I believed in him. I believed in him and his worthiness. And what exactly was he? I now know. And even now I wait for his good word and he shakes me from him like a dog. I wish...
My dear Mrs. Casaubon, this is so hard for you. And you've been invisible to us all in this trouble.
I've lost my faith in all I believed. I've lost the meaning of my life, and I have no one to turn to.
You have me to turn to, now. Life is harsh, but you are young, Mrs. Casaubon, and blooming. And he is not master of his feelings in this crisis. I think when the commonplace, we must all die, changes suddenly into, I must die and soon, then death grapples us, and his fingers are cruel. Fear can make cowards of us all, my dear young friend. Forgive him and have pity. I know you can do this. You have greatness in you.
Edward?
Who's there? Dorothea? It's so late. Were you waiting for me? Come, my dear, come. You are young and need not to extend your life by watching.